audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to issue 4058 of the world's ongoing, weekly updated official Last Will and Testament of the planet Earth. The official audio document chronicling the legacy of this planet between now and the end of the world, somewhere between 3 months and 5 billion years from now. It's a ballpark figure. might be a bit either way. I haven't built in a contingency. I am Andy Zaltzman, and if you cut me, I say ow. Here in London, we are today, the city where 500 years from now to the day, we in Britain will be holding a referendum on whether or not to rejoin planet Earth. After we've leave it in a referendum 470 years from now to join a new trading bloc with the 18th century, after time travel enables us to trade with our former selves, which could work out very well for both sides. Joining me here today in London, a welcome return to the Bugle, to a man I last saw flying a helicopter into a crowd of screaming children. They deserved it. Well, they paid to see it. It was in a pantomime. It's Al Murray.
Hi, Andy.
That was sensational. The helicopter in your pantomime. That was the theatrical extravaganza of the millennium for me.
It was a bizarrely high point in the show as well for me. And when I got the script, you know, I'm reading it thinking, oh, there's a joke about a cow here and you know, the magic beans and all that. And then turn it there's a bit where one of the other cast members says, "Where is Al?" And then in the stage direction says, "Al appears upstage in a helicopter." I think, right, I'm doing this. I'll take this gig. I had to be strapped in properly. It was a fuselage of a helicopter from a scrapyard, apparently.
Right.
And it had crashed the helicopter in
oh, right, that's ominous.
In real life. It had been repurposed as a prop. But they had to strap me in properly and everything. And
how badly had it crashed in real life?
I didn't inquire. I didn't want to know. You didn't want to know. You didn't want to.
Was it haunted? That's all I want.
Well, it was a haunting experience, but I don't know that it was haunted. But every time I'd get in, and because we did 64 shows, you know, straight through. Each time, me and the stage manager strapping in, we go, "Okay, time for flight number 32." Whatever, you know, and it was a sensational thing to have done.
Yeah, and since you were last on the Bugle, you have had a baby.
Yes, that's I have. I've been involved in the baby making process. Yeah,
and that just shows the amazing fertility power of the Bugle.
The Bugle. Yeah,
I mean, you were on in what was it? In August for the first time.
Yeah. August December, in you have a baby. With the live crowd.
That's a very fast gestation period between coming on the Bugle and having a... Are the two biologically... I can never remember.
They're not biologically related, no.
I'm a bit out of the loop. and also...
Going on the Bugle gets you late?
No, I'm saying it makes you fecund.
Oh, right, okay. Because that'd be quite a boast, wouldn't it? Hey, I was on the Bugle this week. Yeah.
Showbiz has changed, Al. joining us here today for the first time on the Bugle, it's comedian, writer, podcaster, and no-time American ski jump champion. No shame in that. It's Jen Kirkman.
Thank you. I really hope it doesn't make me fertile.
All right.
Because I'm not in the business of having a baby right
okay,
now,
right,
so
okay.
I'm nervous now.
It is a business as well.
Yeah.
If you want to monetize it.
Yeah, that's hard to monetize. I've had mine for 11 and 9 years now, and they've been an absolute financial drain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, my eldest is 18, so I'm waiting for her to actually return a profit.
Yeah.
We're a long way in.
Yeah.
You never know. She could win a contest. You know, like a...
The lottery.
Like Britain's Got Talent or something.
It's unlikely. And my daughter's she's talentless, that elder one.
Does she listen to podcasts, Al?
I think it's important to be honest about your children, isn't it? You know, if you've got a child who can't sing, you've got to tell them they can't sing.
Yeah, forcefully.
Or they'll end up on a talent show making a fool of themselves and disgracing their family.
So, Jen, you've been doing your stand-up show at the Soho Theatre. How have you enjoyed London?
I've loved it every time I come here. And it could possibly be that I am getting better at my job, but I feel the audiences are getting better.
Oh, right.
Do you know what I mean? I feel like they're getting more loose and loud laughing. I swear years ago when I came here, it was a different feeling.
I mean, that's Brexit, isn't it? We just laugh more.
We're set free.
That's what's actually happened, Jen.
Since last year, we've become free people.
You've been liberated from being part of Europe and getting intelligence that you might need and other important things.
So this is the Bugle for the week beginning Monday, the 5th of February 2018. We're recording on the 2nd of February, making it 3,000 years to the day since the 2nd of February 982 BC. Way back at a simpler time when Wi-Fi signals were really bad, but people didn't mind. It was a more patient time. And on this day in 982 BC, the Greek fitness guru and inventor, Arklopteos of Megalognossos, created the world's first balance board when he was discovered by King Agakloptikos standing on an upturned tortoise and claimed he was researching a new product. And just the next week, he invented the fitness ball when caught in flagrante with a large watermelon. On this day, the 2nd of February in 1848, the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo was signed. Wow. Classic treaty. That's brought an end to the Mexican-American War.
Treaties are interesting, aren't they? Because at the time, they obviously seem like a really the right thing to do, don't they?
And then
a couple of years later, everyone's going, oh, I don't know, I'm not sure about that.
Yeah. I think it's partly name, isn't it? They raise expectations. You think they're going to be full of treats and then mostly full of complicated subclauses.
Well, I've just been reading a book about the Norman Conquest and the French king in the mid 11th century. He used to do this thing called the Peace of God, where he'd say, right, the Peace of God is now hereby instated. You're supposed to stop fighting. And people would basically ignore it. He'd turn up in like an area like Normandy or Anjou or something, and go, right, peace of God from now on. And they'd all be like, nah, f*** off. And it's really funny reading this. This guy, one of the French Henry Kings, I'm not reading it closely, this book. He'd turn up and he'd go, right, knock it off, you lot. And then they go, no, sorry, it doesn't apply here.
Right.
Your peace of God does not apply here, which I think is really fantastic.
Like naughty children.
Yeah.
It's so sweet. I mean, it's a noble attempt.
Yeah, it's a nice idea.
Why not start there?
Yeah, exactly. And there were people had a real problem with people building castles illegally. They just put up a castle without permission.
Wouldn't you? It seems like, I mean, I've never built one, that it would take a while to put one up. So how far do you get before someone goes, wait, are you building a castle? That is illegal.
That is an excellent question, because it seems that, you know, our idea of a castle, like a big stone building, basically, if you put a mound up with a palisade, some logs on the top of it, that's a castle.
Right.
And
sounds like a tax dodge to me, doesn't it? Is there some tax break for castles and not houses?
Well, I mean, this is the cause of most of the unrest in northwest France in the 11th century, is illegal castles.
Right. Well, I mean, that's what you get on the Bugle. You get up-to-the-minute topical stuff about 11th century French castles. Top story this week, and Donald Trump has banged on for 80 minutes about the, well, let's say the State of the Union, the perceived State of the Union. It was an interesting speech. I sat up and watched it very late at night, and that is not a healthy thing to do unless you are an aficionado of Trump. Jen, you digested it in transcript.
I read the transcript and I saw a clip. So he was supposed to say to everyone still recovering in Texas, Florida, Louisiana, Puerto Rico, the Virgin Islands, California, and everywhere else, we are with you. We love you. He says love a lot. And we will pull through together. He didn't say California because he's mad at us.
Oh, right.
He doesn't like. So he just dropped that off and didn't actually say it because he's mad that we didn't vote for him. I couldn't bring myself to watch it. And then but I have seen some clips and we got the sort of drugged Trump, the one that is very slow and seems like he's on Xanax. So I don't know if
is that
they have
better than the Trump au naturel.
It's less unpredictable, but it should be alarming to people that he seems heavily medicated. I don't know if they give it to him because they don't want him to go off, or he's twilighting, or whatever they call it, sunsetting, because I think he's early dementia. I don't know what it is. Or he just has a drug habit. This is completely my opinion. But if you were a real estate...
Mine as well.
It's 2018. It's the era of Trump. Opinions are facts.
That's so true. Reading this, it sounds like a child's book report. I mean, and he has speech writers, so they have to write it to his stupidity. I don't know how he gets through the teleprompter, which makes me think he has an earpiece in. And that's why he goes so slow as well.
Well, that'll be interesting.
So if these are my theories.
If that is ever... I mean, maybe that proves that he's not under...
Right.
Quite as controlled by Moscow as some people have said. Because surely if someone in Moscow is controlling that earpiece, at some point he'd have said, Das vidanya. Спасибо большое.
Well, that's the other thing. He should have said our union is completely being torn apart from the inside because Russia's tactics are working. But... I don't think you can say that. Right.
No, he can't say that out loud without getting a certain element of criticism.
Was it regarded as a good performance? Because I always think the interesting thing about Trump is he's made it his business to set the bar so low.
Yeah, it's clever that, isn't it?
But when he goes to Congress and reads an autocue without a stumble or shouting at some journalists or complimenting someone on their hat or impersonating a disabled person, there's a ripple of, ooh, didn't he do well?
You know, yeah.
In the same way that someone... squeezing one tiny turd into a potty halfway through a dirty protest should be congratulated. You know, by lowering the bar, if it turns up and just reads a thing from beginning to end, even if it, like you say, it's sort of gibberish, Janet and John level, reading level gibberish.
Yes.
People go, oh, the sort of stable Trump, or what do they call it, or good Trump.
They always say, that's today he became president.
Yeah, presidential.
Presidential. Yeah. I think they've stopped doing it because every network that does it gets attacked on Twitter now when they dare to say something like that. But he says love a lot. It's such a strange thing. It's this almost glow of humanity that comes through him. But he just keeps saying, we love you, to different states. It's
he's got a lot of love, you know.
Well, he called the bill that he didn't end up passing, the DACA bill, to not deport people that have lived here forever, a bill of love. He wants to have a bill of love. And that's what he said. And then the Republicans took him aside and they didn't let him do the bill. But see, he almost did a good thing.
And he did describe coal as beautiful, clean coal. I mean, with all due respect to coal... I mean, even coal doesn't find itself sexy. I mean, that is not a sexy bit of rock.
He had his big boy face. He just kind of, like, he puts his chin out and puffs out, very proud of himself. I also think that's sort of a vanity thing, where he's trying to look...
minimize his chins.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's trying to look thinner and make his eyes less prominent. I couldn't watch it. I can't see his face anymore. I thought this would be over by now. I thought he would be out by now. It's hurting me.
I don't think he's ever going to leave. I think he's going to be president in about 100 years' time.
He will declare martial law, I'm sure, and be the king. But I thought maybe he'd have a heart attack. I thought maybe they would make him resign because he doesn't want the job. And so I feel like he would resign. He can do anything and his people will believe him. So if he resigns and says, oh, this is a crap democracy, you know, I don't want to run it. I was better serving America as a businessman. He could just make that up and say, oh, they made me leave. They're being so mean to me. And start, you know, I don't know why he doesn't just do that.
I still think he would do that. Joining the seniors golf tour is the most likely way out. Putting the hours.
That would be amazing.
What I was really struck by, having watched every second of it live, was the number of standing ovations. Now, I know a thing or two about standing ovations. I've had two in my career, one of which was when I left the stage early at a gig in Manchester in 2002. But it's a lot of pretty old people watching that speech, and that's a lot of exercise. The number of standing ovations for those old Republicans to give Donald Trump. And I've just been checking the latest injury reports. Mike Pence... he's been ruled out of vice presidenting for 2 weeks after straining both his hamstrings after standing up and sitting down again 7,000 times in 80 minutes. The Republican Senator Quervil Plaketic, he suffered a double wrist dislocation and a fractured sclafoid in his ulterior node. That's part of the wrist. Clapping a record 11,921 times in Trump's speech. That's the most by a single representative in a president's speech. An average of 56 claps per applaud and 2.4 rounds of applause per minute. He even applauded a cough at one point. And on the Democratic side, Strevel Jark, the senator for New Wessexshire, was hospitalised with a compression fracture of the frontal head bone after a frown penetrated his skull after an unbroken 76-minute scowl. So it was physically demanding.
I mean, the pictures that I saw of it were the Democrats having to stay stony-faced. So yeah. Bernie Sanders and his crew all having to... Whatever they... And that must be... That in itself must be quite difficult.
His face is always like that. And by the way, he's not a Democrat. I just want to make it very clear. Oh, okay. I have a dislike for Bernie Sanders.
All right, okay. Brilliant.
I'm not saying it to you. I'm saying it just to anyone out there. He does not represent...
Brilliant.
His behavior does not represent that of my people.
Okay.
Although I am a socialist at heart.
Right, okay.
Okay, anyway. God, but yes.
Can of worms there? Yeah.
But
pictures of them, like, you know, because it is very hard.
Yeah.
If you've been in an audience where half the audience, they're really into it, it's very hard to maintain that. Nope. I'm not. No, I'm not enjoying this. There's no redeeming. You know, like just a tiny little ripple. Yeah. Also the other thing. I mean, because Trump's other, he's got this balancing act, hasn't he? He has to say everything's great now, and it was shit before.
Yeah.
But if it's great now, there's nothing left for him to do.
Yeah.
Right.
So there's still.
Yeah. So that's why I'm going golfing.
Exactly. So sort of he's got to maintain that some things are still shit. Otherwise, there's no point to it. It's that having to think two separate things at exactly the same time and present them to people. I think it's really interesting. But he's clearly not troubled by being illogical.
No,
he's laid that card very firmly on the table.
Exactly. Yeah, but I think that's really interesting because most people will go, no, this. I can't maintain these two impossible thoughts at once.
Sorry, to your point about them sitting there stony-faced,
yeah.
They're getting complaints now from the Republican side that they behaved that way. But that's the grand tradition whatever the opposing side is, they sit there stony-faced. And at one point during Obama's State of the Union, one of the Republican senators yelled out, "You lie!" And it wasn't even a lie. It was just he was upset that Obama was black and just had a freak out.
Yeah.
But Donald Trump tweeted a complete lie about the ratings.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But this is his... That is the prime club in his bag, isn't it? The ratings lie.
Oh, my God. He said, thank you for all of the nice compliments. It's like me after a show when I tweet to the audience and reviews on the State of the Union speech. Reviews.
Well, reviews, you can... I mean, 5 stars in one paper is 1 star in another.
Well, the thing is, I mean, you can... I'm trying to sort of treat the Trump presidency like he's a sort of Andy Kaufman deep character comic who one day will emerge out the other end of it and go, come on, I was joking. Or die in a wrestling ring or something. I don't know. Don't really know anything about Andy Kaufman except that. But because I watched the Piers Morgan interview where he was obviously trying out some of the everything's great, the economy's better than it ever was.
Oh, okay.
And he did that thing where he sits bolt upright in the chair.
Yeah.
Like, because then he can put his jaw out and he's obviously got this... I'll do my handsome body language now.
Yes!
Like my dreamy body language. And he sits up. And he did that. He did all that. The economy's better than ever has been. The trillion dollars. We put $1 trillion on the stock exchange and all this sort of thing. The stock exchange is better than it has ever been in all American history. You sort of think, and he was rehearsing all this stuff very much like a comic... trying his stuff out at a club gig.
I was just going to say, before you host the Oscars,
exactly.
You try out some of your jokes.
Because no one watched the Piers Morgan thing, so it's like doing a small gig.
I can't believe those two sat together. It's the two, literally the two most terrible white males that exist on the planet Earth, I think. Well, there's probably worse people, but...
Well, there certainly have been worse white males in the past, I think.
Yes, maybe not historically.
As the early to mid-20th century would testify.
And some that build illegal castles. Don't forget them.
Yeah, well, yes. Terrible people.
You know that he would have been one of the illegal castle builders.
Absolutely.
Everything he has built is an illegal castle.
Donald the Bastard, he'd have been
called. As you say about the ratings, he claimed it was the most watched State of the Union in history, which was impressive and would have been even more impressive if it had been true. But still impressive. As we know, in the 21st century, you don't let the facts get in the way of a good fact. He complimented Fox as well for their big share of the, I think, 12 million of the 46 million who watched it. And he's basically moonlighting as president of the United States from his main job as head of PR for Fox News. But, and Fox News seems to me to be a blend of kind of American capitalism at its ultimate height and Soviet-level propaganda.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of the devil wears Pravda.
Yes, I love that.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
That's a really good one.
That's a good one.
You sound genuinely surprised, Al.
Sorry.
After all the years we've been working together.
I need to recover from that one. That was a serviceable joke and everything.
It is distressing to me that he did get even that many, because the ones that have beat him out were only a few million more, 48 million, 46 million. Why did he have 45 million? We go around on Twitter saying, don't watch it. Don't give him the ratings. Don't watch it. And people still watch it.
Right, yeah.
So I'm upset with Americans who watched it ironically.
Right, yeah. What if you watch it like a Medusa? Like, if you're looking at it in a mirror, does that count to the ratings? Or
I don't know. That's that.
Through a shop window. That's all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like in the 50s.
Crowds of,
just stand outside
of Democrats
the shop.
Outside TV shops going, boo. He said these words I found particularly moving. Tonight, I call upon all of us to set aside our differences, to seek out common ground, and to summon the unity we need to deliver for the people we were elected to serve. Which is rather like a hyena calling for better table manners. Guys, how about some decorum at meal times? Wait your turn, you'll all get your bit of the zebra. And would it be too much to ask you f***ing hooligans to use some f***ing cutlery? Aftermath of shock democratic results, part two now. And on this side of the Atlantic, well, the Brexit schmozzle continues to rumble on. Amidst continuing confusion over what the f*** is going on, what the f*** was going on when we voted, and what the f*** will go on. Angela Merkel's been cranking up the burns.
Well, what we've discovered is that it's going to be a shock to many people that Germans have a sense of humour. Because the laws of comedy, as we all know, dictate, comedy's all about surprise, that's rule A.
Yep.
Rule B, the Germans have no sense of humour, that's rule B. C, the British have the greatest sense of humour in the world.
Testify.
And D, because we can laugh for ourselves. That's the reason, right? So it would come as no shock to buglers who long ago turned their backs on comedy to learn that it is. Comedy is, A, no surprise at all, that B, the Germans have a sense of humour, C, the British don't think it's funny, and D, it's because they're laughing at us. And the story is... and news has emerged from Germany via journalists writing about it in German newspapers, and then a British journalist reading those newspapers, which is an extraordinary means of transmission for information. Angela Merkel has the brass neck, schier Neckengebrass in German, to have joked with journalists about the irony lady PM Theresa May. Basically, her riff was, this is comedian talk, Andy, she was riffing on the... Brexit deadlock. Basically, Merkel says she ran into Theresa May and they had a conversation that went this way. And she did this for some journalists in a room as a routine. And where Merkel says to May, what do you want from the Brexit deal? May replies, make me an offer. Right? So Merkel then says, I don't need to make you an offer. You're the one who wants to leave. What do you want? May would then say, make me an offer. And apparently she says they went round and round in circles doing this. Merkel did this as her hilarious routine, right, for German journalists. I mean, I wouldn't open it with it, but...
it's comedy of repetition.
It's like, who's on first?
Yeah. Stuart Lee.
Stuart Lee, yeah. And this, of course, has outraged people who shit on about Germans not having a sense of humour and how much they like 633 Squadron and sun loungers and all that stuff. And I think it's really, really interesting because an endless theme of the whole Brexit thing is no one has considered for a minute that we're doing this in public.
And it was our little secret, wasn't it?
It's our little secret. Yeah. In this negotiation that's been pitched by the Brexit, pro-Brexit people, they've just never, ever taken into account that there are other people involved in this thing.
Right.
And that they might, even if they don't, you know, they don't like it, and the Germans said they'd rather we didn't do this, but they're laughing at us. It's just it's like the absolute hard burn for your these Germanomonomaniacs, you know, people who still think it's the war. And then the other thing we had with this, of course, is the German ambassador said that the British are obsessed with the Second World War. To which I say, who do you think you're kidding, Mr. Hitler? If you think old England's done. I mean, Jen, I don't know what this must look like to the outside world, this Brexit thing. But this whole situation has arrived as a completely internal problem, and now we're having to deal with the external ramifications. And we're run a real danger of looking like complete fucking twat.
It's a relief as an American to go, oh my God. People as ridiculous as us.
We were the John the Baptist to your idiotic Jesus. Yeah.
So for 1 minute, for maybe a month, we looked like we would be superior to you. I just mean in that sense of bragging rights about not being stupid.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we joined in. So now it's just, it terrifies me, to be honest. I feel like I'm watching two countries completely get taken over by Russian propaganda and thinking that they need to split from within their own selves, that's us, and then you guys splitting from Europe.
The thing I find really amazing about this is, all right, let's say leaving Europe is the right thing to do, then do a good job of it, rather than go, oh, the Germans are having a go at it. It's like the sort of, it's this really weird,
we didn't vote to do a good job of it. That wasn't on the ballot paper, was it? We just voted for Brexit.
Yeah.
No one said it had to be a good job. You know, clearly the problem is that we just didn't. We voted not having discussed for more than about a minute what the f*** would happen afterwards. Mm. So the whole thing's being riffed. I guess you can't discuss it in advance. That's showing weakness. It's like a drop of blood in a shark tank.
And then the hippie in me goes, you can't really leave Europe, man, because you're technically. Can still channel to Paris. I mean, you're all one big blob of land.
That's what anti-EU people always say. Well, we're not leaving. We love Europe. We just don't like the EU. We're not leaving Europe. Of course we don't. Why do you always deliberately confuse the two? And I think, well, because that's exactly what you've been doing. The fact you don't like having to talk to Belgians.
Well,
it's bizarre. It's like racism against other white people. I've never seen.
Hey, look,
we're
specialists, right? We can conjure racism out of anything. that white cup. I don't like the look of that white cup. That mug on this table is white, and it's got different customs to me. Don't like it.
Neat little summary of British social history there. But well, it might not be a might not need to tunnel to Paris. So it could be a bridge coming soon. Mm. Boris Johnson, who is essentially the improv foreign secretary, just riffing out one of the most important jobs in the country, said that there will be a bridge, and those on the Brexit side clearly responded by saying, "I think you missed out the syllable draw there, Boris."
I think Americans kind of think of Angela Merkel as a rock star, too. There's a lot of popular memes that go around of her sitting with Donald.
A rock star?
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard many things said about Angela Merkel, but...
I think she's sort of like...
Not that she's the new Kurt Cobain.
We look to her as almost this, like, save us, like maybe Germany will adopt us or something. The way that she sat with Trump in the Oval Office, and there's a famous picture of him looking down like a little boy, and it looks like she's scolding him. And one of the memes is like, what did I tell you about Nazis? He's like, don't invite them in the Oval Office. You know, it's something like that. And we love when she turns her back on him. And so, I don't know. I'm sorry she's making a fool of Theresa May.
But well, I'm fine with it.
We think she's cool.
Just breaking, actually, on this subject, a new report from the CBHAWMRH, that's the Committee for Brexiting Hard, and we mean real hard, Brexit will produce an average 0.2% rise in the vague feeling of national independence, a 0.4% increase in the average perception that we're controlling our own destiny, and a 0.07% upward bump in the average sense that we could now become a multi-millionaire Nobel Prize-winning scientist because all the Romanian-Poly Bulgarians have stopped coming over here to plumb our toilets for us. And that report has been verified by the Cross-Party Committee on Indefinable National Emotions, which is very, very influential in this Brexit age. obviously, there's two sides to interpret these figures. The National Institute for liking hypothetically nice things in a vague kind of way countered by saying that although on average British people are 0.4% more in control of their destiny, or that's how they perceive it, that is due to a hardcore of hardcore hard Brexit hard ears feeling around 13,000% more in control. And that overall 12.9% fewer people feel were in control. So it's, you know, you can interpret these things in any way you want. Or indeed just make them up. We need to move on to some extremely pressing technology versus the natural world news now. And this is arguably the greatest story of the millennium so far. A peacock has been thrown off an aeroplane. Not just any peacock, but what was described by its owner as an emotional support peacock. The
ESP.
This is a harrowing story. It was in a flight in America.
Of course.
The airline claimed the bird contravened its size and weight guidelines. Body shaming a peacock. Is there no depth of insecurity to which we will not stoop? The bird named Dexter, presumably because its majestic plumage is reminiscent of the majestic batsmanship of the former England cricketer Ted Dexter, apparently generally avoids public transport. As its owner, who's an artist, says it would be too traumatic for it. Well, public transport is too traumatic for humans, but we f***ing learn to endure it. And it's that kind of resilient attitude that gives us the edge in the evolutionary race and explains why there are so few peacocks on the boards of FTSE 100 companies. The peacock was originally bought, this is a charming backstory, to be part of an art installation. I mean, no wonder this peacock's got big ideas, frankly. If it's been, it's been peacock, mollycoddled as a...
But this peacock is going to be really big-headed now, isn't it?
Well,
it's going to be going, literally showing off even more than a peacock would normally. Yeah, I'm the one that got banned from that flight.
Yeah, I'm literally peacocking. It has its own Instagram account.
Does it?
Right. Mm-hmm. It was, he was, or she, I don't know, it's, I guess it's a man.
Hang on.
Yeah.
So, peacock, isn't it, if it's a peacock?
A peacock is better at using social media than I am. I've already got a... Have a long bath with my
It's that he perched atop a luggage cart at the airport and wrote, spent 6 hours trying to get on my flight to L.A. And he said, tomorrow my human friends are going to drive me cross country. So he has friends, an Instagram account. I don't know how many followers. I'll take a look.
All right. I'm starting to get peacock jealousy here. obviously, this was a decision that has caused considerable unhappiness, particularly from Dexter the Peacock himself, who gave an emotional press conference after he was turfed off the flight. The decision to bar me from this self-proclaimed flight is aviarist, peacockist, and above all, sexist. Whilst I understand you humans' understandable embarrassment at allowing a bird to go on a powered, artificial, environmentally destructive, fake enormo bird, that does not make it acceptable. Regarding the injustice towards me as a peacock, well, look at you f***ing lemmings sitting there like sheep in your cocoons. Watching some half-assed piece of Hollywood shite on your 8-inch screens on this aeroplane when you could be watching my unbelievably awesome feathers. Seriously, look at this shit. It's f***ing sensational. Moreover, without downplaying in any way the history of prejudice against females, have you ever seen a peahen thrown off an aeroplane? Of course you haven't. Sure, I'm not a perfect peacock. I have been a bit of an absentee father to some of my pea chicks, and I have fluttered my feathers without asking permission on occasion, but I feel that this is now a witch hunt. One last thing, regarding me being, quotes, too big, it's mostly feathers. And finally, have some f***ing respect. Without things like me, you flightless f***ers wouldn't have even thought of f***ing trying to f***ing fly. I will not be taking questions. Quick bit of tech news. Elon Musk, Bugle favourite, the obviously fictitious entrepreneur, absolutely no way he exists, has apparently made... He sold $21 million of flamethrowers in a day. I mean, that's... How does that sentence even exist? And he also sold a lot of fire extinguishers as well. I mean, that is the definition of a captive f***ing market, isn't it?
Well, that's capitalism.
You might also like this.
That is capitalism.
I didn't even know it was legal.
Oh, no.
To have a flamethrower.
Of course it is. It's protected by your Second Amendment rights, isn't it? Sub-Amendment 3A, the right to throw flame. Of course, back in the day, that referred to lighting fires in winter to ward off bears and wolves and British people. But now the flamethrower lobby is so powerful that it's been twisted beyond its initial intention.
I think this is a good test bed for that. You know that thing when people say, oh, you know, guns don't kill people, people kill people.
Yeah.
Let's find out whether flamethrowers kill people.
Right.
So yes.
It's like a perfect test.
Yeah.
Well, it's like a controlled experiment for that adage. You know, it's a chance for America to put it to the test. So if a flamethrower kills someone, then obviously guns kill people as well. You know, logically. It's like a logical test bed.
Yes.
So I think he's doing us all a favour here.
Well, it's not guns that kill people. It's the fact that not everyone has been dipped head to toe in the River Styx to be given immortality that kills people. Everybody knows that. A quick other showbiz story. A BBC review found no gender bias in its on-air pay decisions, despite there being what might be described as obvious gender bias in its on-air pay decisions. And, well, this is just, I mean, the latest example of sexism in showbiz. As evidenced just a couple of weeks ago, Minnie Mouse, finally given her own Hollywood Walk of Fame star, 40 years after her male co-star and former lover Mickey Mouse. Rumours are that part of the reason it took so long was that Mickey briefed against Minnie after she complained about his habit of shitting everywhere he went on set and then laughing it off by saying, mice will be mice. Also rumoured that Minnie was offered a payoff of up to 10 kilograms of cheese in exchange for not revealing that Mickey had a clandestine interspecies relationship with Melissa Duck, the then-girlfriend of Mickey's cartoon rival Daffy Duck, who was from the rival Warner Brothers stable, which, of course, Disney frowned on big time.
You know, I have some hot news. I was at the BBC the other day on the Woman's Hour, and they had to have the woman that was going to Parliament the next day to talk about it.
Carrie Gracie.
Yes, she wasn't allowed to read the statement herself because she's not anything to do with being a woman, but because she's the one protesting it. So ironically, just a man had to come in and read about it. And the BBC is insisting on calling it fair pay, not equal pay. And they're denying really that it's happening.
I mean, the BBC are going to have to explain why there seems to be a gender pay gap. Are they going to end up saying, yeah, but all the women are worse at their job than all the men?
That's what they said in the statement. Basically, they said a lot of this is based on work, you know, experience and output, and it's like, but that's the systematic thing you guys don't get. But I sat there in the studio while they read that ridiculous
when
statement.
Will there be men's hour? Hey,
that's
woman's
right.
Hour. All right, I've had that for like 70 years now. When will there be men's hour? Men's hour. When will that happen? Hey,
What I want to know,
God,
is why Kirsty Walk, outstanding TV journalist, presenter of Newsnight and various other things, still paid less than Great Uncle Bulgaria out of the Wombles. Doesn't make sense to me. In another gender wars story, science breaking news this week. Apparently, the number of men dying from prostate cancer has now overtaken female deaths from breast cancer for the first time in the UK.
Well done, boys.
There you go, Mrs. Pocahontas. You got what you wanted.
But I read, I'm going to lower the tone now. I read that
family show, Al. Family
that,
show.
That you reduce your possibility of prostate cancer by orgasming every day.
Mm-hmm. I've heard
right.
that.
So, like, what's going on there? If the male rate's going up,
that's right. And how? And that certainly explains why Prince Philip has lived so long.
So, is there a crisis that men are not enjoying themselves right now?
Sounds like it. We can't even summon up the gumption to wank.
Maybe because all these women are squawking about
that's
their
exactly
rights,
it.
And
that's
then we are not attractive to them
thank
anymore
you.
In their fantasies.
Thank you for joining the dots for me. It would have been completely out of order if I'd suggested that, but
yep.
You know, here we are. Go on, woman's hand. Tell them.
We've just about run out of time on the Bugle. So the results of the Win Your Place in the Bilderberg Group competition have sadly been postponed until next week, but you will get an extra week on your term on the Bilderberg Inner Sanctum for the winner. And do keep your emails coming in to hellobuglers@thebuglepodcast.com. So, well, Jen, thanks very much for coming on the...
it was a pleasure.
...on the Bugle. How long is your run in Soho?
It'll be over Saturday night.
Oh, right. So probably, I mean, absolutely no point plugging it.
No, but just to let people know that they could have seen it if they missed it. Yeah. Next time.
Consider that a retrospective plug. Al, have you got anything to plug at the moment?
No.
No.
I've got nothing on this year at the moment. I mean, I have plans to do things, but nothing certain. I turned 50 this year and I'm feeling like I might do f*** all.
That's great.
To celebrate.
Brexit, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Brexit. Well, I'm free now, you see. Don't need to work anymore. Land of milk and honey. Sun at Uplands.
You can just lie back and enjoy the feeling of self-determination.
Yeah.
Jen, you have a podcast of your own. Do you want to...
Yes, it's called I Seem Fun, the Diary of Jen Kirkman podcast, available at all podcasting places.
Out of the ether. Just grab it out of the sky.
And again, especially, it's not available in Europe, only in... England now because of Brexit.
Right, yeah.
I won't let any other Europeans listen to
good.
It. Good.
So, they don't deserve to listen to it.
No.
Sweet taste of freedom. Though,
yeah.
Not being able to go somewhere else.
thank you for listening, Buglers. Don't forget, there are still some tickets available for the Bugle live show on the 22nd of February. It will feature Nish Kumar and Alice Fraser. And come to all of my Satirist for Hire show tour dates coming up this week.
Take one.
Can I remember them?
Take two.
I think. What am I doing? Oh. I'm sure there's one other. Oh, f**k's sake.
Do you want me to Google it?
Yeah, if you want to go to your website.
Hang on. If it's not happening in the next 6 hours, I don't know. I don't know what is going on.
Take three.
Also come to all of these Satirist for Hire shows. And please, if you are coming, do submit your email request for topics to satirise this at satiristforhire.com. Wednesday in Brighton is sold out, brackets, tiny room. Leicester on Thursday is not sold out, brackets, also tiny room. Do come along. I have Galway on the 10th in Ireland, Dublin on the 11th, Belfast on the 12th, the following week, Monmouth, Worcester, Exeter, Canterbury, and then there's some more after that. All details at andyzaltzman.co.uk. Any further questions?
No.
Comments? Right.
No.
Let's call that a wrap. Thank you for listening, Buglers. We'll be back next week with Mr. Anubhav Pal, who will be in America, which is very exciting. A new time zone for him on the Bugle. Until then, goodbye.